Support for Reporting on Technology and Innovation comes from Juna Sleep System. Personalize your mattress. More information at junasleep.com. You're listening to Innovation on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Kara Hetland, broadcasting from the studios at the University of Sioux Falls. And joining, we're going to talk genetics, right? We are. Dr. Garth Davis is with me today, and he is the Chief Scientific Officer of Avera Institute for Human Genetics. Thanks for coming in today and spending most of the hour.
Good afternoon, Kara. Again, thank you for inviting me. It's always a great pleasure to be here and talk about the exciting research that we're doing and the exciting clinical work that we're doing also. And I'm really pleased to have my graduate student with me as well.
And this is Casey Finnicum. Casey is a PhD student.
Yep, that's correct.
And so we're going to talk about, I got to look at the word, microbiome.
Yep, that's right.
Microbiome.
Human microbiome, yep.
Human microbiome. So we're going to talk about that, but let's start first, because this all builds together with what you're doing, right?
Yes,
so we're going to start first with the twin study.
Yeah.
And it's been a little over a year since Avera started its own twin study.
That's correct. Yeah.
Okay.
We started back in May 2016. The Avera Twin Registry was launched then. Of course, that is directly involved with the Netherlands Twin Registry, whom we've been working with for some time. The Avera Twin Registry has been a great success. For example, we've already collected 275 sets of twins. We've got their parents as well. We have their siblings. And all of these individuals, we have their DNA from them. We also have surveys that they've answered, looking at their lifestyle, activity level, their diet. It's really exciting. And we're kind of comparing the twins in the Netherlands that we've been working with. And I remember we had Dr. Dorit Boomsma here a couple of years ago to talk about that. We're comparing the twins' lifestyle in the Netherlands with lifestyle in South Dakota.
Because really the key is the difference between how much genetics play a role and how much the environment plays a role in certain diseases, correct?
Exactly, Kara. The question is the age-old question of genes and environment, or nature and nurture. With the Avera Twin Registry and the Netherlands Twin Registry, there are stark differences in the environment that people live in. If you've ever visited the Netherlands or certain parts of Europe, the first thing that you see is that 90% perhaps go to work or go about their daily business on a bicycle. In South Dakota, not so much. I mean, I cross the road in my car to buy something at Lewis. But yes, genes and environment, lifestyle. Mm-hmm. But are the genetics very similar? And we found that, yes, in the Midwest, our genetics, well, not mine because I'm from Wales, but our genetics, the Midwest genetics are very similar to the Dutch genetics. So then we can compare genes versus environment for all those types of diseases or conditions. And one of those, of course, is looking at the microbiome. Casey, who's an expert in that field, can explain that a little bit better. But that's one of the projects that we do.
Okay, so we'll bounce back and forth. I mean, it was a nice volley over to Casey here to just explain what the microbiome is and what kind of research you're looking at.
Absolutely. So the human microbiome consists of all of the different microorganisms that inhabit our bodies, both on our surfaces as well as within our gastrointestinal tract. And these microorganisms consist of bacteria, archaea, eukaryotic organisms, and even viruses. And they exist as a whole ecosystem on our bodies and within our bodies. And for a long time, we really thought that they were not really doing much there. And a lot of us really think, when we think of bacteria, we think of disease bacteria, we think of infections and stuff. But the vast majority of bacteria that exist in this world are actually don't harm us or actually benefit us. And so as we've been discovering these things, we've started to delve into how these microorganisms are impacting our health and what facets of health that they're impacting. So specifically at Avera, we're currently interested in looking at how the microbiome is associated with obesity. So obesity has been strongly associated with gut microbiota contents. It's believed that these microbes within our gastrointestinal tract, they eat the same food that we do. They help extract out that energy and pass that energy on to our bodies. And so we know that these microbes have a role in the obese process, but we need to kind of start to parse out those interactions.
And what role does our genetic makeup play in this?
Yeah, that's a very good question. So there's been a number of studies that have shown that the composition of our gut microbiome is very dependent upon our genetic profile. And that a lot of those studies that have shown that have shown that utilizing twin studies, and you compare the microbiome of monozygotic twins, and they're highly similar. And that is, again, another thing that we're also doing at the Avera Institute for Human Genetics, is comparing the gut microbiota between monozygotic twins and seeing what do those twins share, what aspects of their ecosystems do they share, and those aspects may be driven by their genetic profile. And then we're also comparing those twins to their spouses, and so those individuals are genetically not related, but they live together, they share their environment. And by doing those comparisons, we can start to understand what aspects of our microbiome are shared due to our environment. And so as Dr. Davis had mentioned, a lot of these disease states come down to environment and genetics. And so it's the same thing for the gut microbiome.
I'm going to try and simplify it just a bit with this question. But is what we eat, does that have any impact on the microbiome in our guts?
Without a doubt. And you know, one of the most exciting parts of Casey's PhD has been looking at the microbiome in identical twins, monozygotic twins, as he mentioned, identical twins that have different BMIs, which means body mass index, mm-hmm. basically meaning one is heavier than the other. So that's very rare. Okay, so it's very rare indeed to have identical twins where one twin is much heavier than the other. So what Casey did was look at the microbiome in their gut between the two identical twins. And what he's found, and he's much more experienced in telling this story than me, but what he's found is stark differences between the one twin and the other twin. So what is that related to?
What is that?
Is it their genes, or is it the actual organisms? But we can also look at their diet, of course, but as Casey will explain, that most monozygotic twins, particularly adolescent twins, up to adulthood, live in the same household.
Mm-hmm.
So what is the reason for that?
Yeah. So they live in the same household and they tend to eat a lot of the same foods. As you can imagine, you make one dinner and the whole family eats that. So for a long time, the dietary components for the monozygotic twins tend to be very similar, but, you know, obviously diverge later in life.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and that's one of those things, again, about comparing the Avera Twin Registry with the Netherlands Twin Registry. We've got what we call food surveys, and we compare what food groups are more popular or are eaten more often in the Netherlands than here. And it's not surprising, but it's quite surprising some of the results that you see from food preferences. For example, what would you think, Cara, is the most popular food, or in our food surveys, what's the most popular food or the most preferred food in the Netherlands?
I don't know. Is it pizza?
Not pizza. Most people say fish or cheese.
Yeah.
Actually, strawberries.
Really?
Yeah. And I can tell you that when we do the food surveys here in
Midwest,
it's not strawberries. No.
Huh.
So, again, that affects the microbiome. So, great opportunity to look at genes versus environment, bikes versus cars, mm-hmm. strawberries versus
pizza.
Yeah. So
I'm hungry, you can tell.
Yeah. No, so that's what Casey's been doing. And it's great. The talking about the two registries, part of Casey's PhD spent time in the Netherlands itself studying with the great scientists that they have there, learning the techniques in biostatistics and so forth, and he can talk a little bit about that.
So can you take the microbiome from the DNA sample, or do you have to have a different sample?
So really, that can kind of be taken in a number of ways. So really, a lot of times when we talk about the microbiome, we really tend to talk about the gut microbiome or the microbiome within our gastrointestinal tract. But really, there's microbial communities that exist elsewhere in the body as well. You have a microbial community that exists behind the ear, within the urinary tract, within your armpit. A number of aspects of your body have their own microbiomes in a sense. And so the what might be considered a sample varies depending on what you're testing. But when we're looking at the gut microbiota, which we tend to at Avera, that comes from a fecal sample. So we collect fecal samples from the participants, and we extract the, or we take out the bacterial DNA from those samples, and then we sequence that DNA. We look at all the A, T, C's, and G's that belong to these bacteria. And by looking at and understanding what genes are present or for these microbes, we can understand the identity of these microbes that are present.
And then is this going to have a translation, a correlation at all to like finding a cure for Crohn's disease or anything like that? I mean, does that relate as well?
Well, this opens up lots of opportunities. You mentioned Crohn's disease, inflammatory bowel disease, et cetera, obesity. Could we, and again, Casey is the expert here, but could we adjust, I don't say alter, but could we adjust that microbiome that's going on in your your gut to be beneficial to not putting on weight or less inflammation? And one of the key points of Casey's PhD actually is looking at inflammatory mechanisms due to that gut microbiota that's going on. And are those microbes causing inflammation, which, of course, in Crohn's disease is a critical
So is
issue.
It your immune system? Is it your microbiome?
Yeah, so a lot of times it's a close interplay between the two. So really, in a number of studies that have shown, if you grow up an animal in an environment that they're not exposed to any microbes, they essentially a germ-free environment, that mouse or that animal will have a messed up immune response. They won't have a properly functioning immune response. And so it's this constant symbiosis and interrelatedness between these gut bacteria and between our immune system, where, like I said, these microbes are providing beneficial functions for us, but our immune system is also trying to keep a hold on them, dampen them, you know, kind of constrain the ecosystem, if you will. So it's a constant give and take between the two. And sometimes if there's a disruption in that crosstalk between the two, that might manifest in something like irritable bowel disease or something like that. But then maybe when the ecosystem is working well with our body, then that can actually provide beneficial effects as well. So it's kind of a double-edged sword in that regard.
So I'm hearing, I have not kept this a secret, but I do have Crohn's disease. And so, there's chatter in the Crohn's community that, you know, a fecal transplant might be a treatment.
Right. So for number of disease, or for a disease like Clostridium difficile, for instance, that has been C. diff has been a very good treatment and has been very effective in treating the nasty infections brought on by overuse of antibiotics. For other diseases, there have been a number of people that are postulating or hypothesizing that that is a very good route to go because it might be some disruption. Dysbiosis is the fancy word for it. And how we'd rectify that, is try to get a healthy population back into that individual. But currently the issue is understanding, like I said, the intricacies of those systems. As I mentioned earlier, the composition or the makeup of our gut microbiome is influenced by our genetics plus our environment. And so understanding what microbes might be beneficial for one person is a little bit hard, because what might be beneficial for me might not be beneficial for you, and vice versa. So we really have to key in on some of those intricacies and understand those interrelatednesses. But then eventually, yes, it has a very a huge possible benefit for a number of diseases, not just diseases associated with the gastrointestinal tract, but as far reaching as neurodegenerative diseases like Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, and ALS, a number of other
diseases. And one of the studies that Casey is actually doing is on ALS and the microbiome. So it's very interesting too. So,
and this all relates, and by using the twin DNA, the identical twins DNA, is how you are best able to really find that level of understanding as to what's happening.
Well, what we're looking at is that the human genome it depends who you talk to, but between about 20,000 and 25,000 genes. Identical twins, monozygotic twins, share practically 100% of those genes. So if you have an individual who's identical to the sibling, one sibling is discordant, as we say, meaning they don't have the disease and one does, there has to be a environmental component. So that's one of the things. This is what Casey learned and studied very much in Amsterdam, is the twin model of genetics and statistics, whereby you tease apart how much is genetic and how much is environmental.
And why certain genes are switched on and certain genes aren't.
Perfect, Cara. You remember well from our methylation and our epigenetics. Yeah, so that's right. So some genes are switched on, some genes are switched off. We call it gene expression, but what it is what it's epigenetics, meaning certain genes are switched on due to certain triggers. Okay, so one of the epigenetic mechanisms is exercise. Okay, so tying back again,
some are riding a bike and some are not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so some genes are switched on more than others when you take exercise or you don't take exercise. Again, does that play a role in obesity, for example?
What's next for you, Casey?
Yeah, so I'm just in the midst of, like I said, working on a number of papers. We have a number of very cool studies going on with, as I mentioned, obesity. Also just really trying to understand the underpinnings of what genetic variants are associated with the composition of the gut microbiota. But then we also have some very cool projects, as Dr. Davis alluded to, associated with studying neurodegenerative diseases, specifically ALS, and the role the gut microbiota might play in the development of ALS as well.
Fascinating stuff.
Exciting, yes.
Lots of reasons to have you back.
Exactly.
So Dr. Davies is going to stay with us for the next segment. And Casey, thanks so much for taking time. We wish you the best.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
I look forward to having you on again to update us.